We welcome in our good buddy who's been a part of many of our live shows, our man Matt George of the Locked On Kings podcast and ABC 10. Actually made an appearance on CBS 13, as I'm sure you saw on social media over the weekend.
I don't know how that's possible and how they got away with that, but I guess I'm happy to be there.
I was pleasantly surprised when the video came up and he even referenced you as our guy, Matt George. I was like, well,
one of my friends goes, Matt, you're on CBS 13 right now, and I'm sitting in our newsroom at ABC 10 going, how is that possible? I'm sitting right here.
Oh, it's the equivalent of that of did they ever have a moment when someone on either wrestling organization.
Ravishing Rick Rude was on both channels on the same
really?
Night. Yeah.
Because
Raw was taped.
And the contract ended in between.
He never had a contract. He was basically working day to day. It was right after the screw job. So he does the taped Raw and then he walks out and he like shaved his beard.
Uh-huh.
So he does the taped Raw with the beard and then walks out on Nitro and he had shaved. So he's the only guy to ever appear on both shows on the same night.
Matt George, the Ravishing Rick Rude, Sacramento Media.
My Damian Barling persona got picked up on AEW, I guess.
Oh, that's tremendous.
That's
tremendous.
Come on.
What? Matt, let's talk, man. Let's talk, Matthew. Let's talk.
What happened? No, explain.
I mean, no, he didn't try to, but that was a shot.
Well, I think he just threw a dig at CBS is what you did.
He called him,
you called him AEW.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I mean, I'm all for it. Talk that talk. Hey, we're Switzerland, man. I don't even know if Switzerland's still neutral, but we're neutral.
That's it. We are not DeMar.
The yes. Post McMahon WWE is what ABC 10 is.
I want to give you the opportunity to talk about Keegan Murray before we talk about anything else, because we talked a little bit about him earlier. I know he was a big focal point of your podcast. And, you know, there's a lot to talk about with the Sacramento Kings. We think they're playing really well. We all believe that this is a really good basketball team. And, you know, everyone's saying it's going to take time to come together. It looks like that's starting to happen here a little bit. But you spent a lot of time on last night / this morning's Locked On Kings podcast talking about your guy, Keegan Murray.
Yeah, I mean, like if there's such thing as like a secret star, that's what Keegan Murray is, right? He's the guy that is not a household name. He's the guy that doesn't get talked about. He's the guy that doesn't get featured on ESPN highlight reels unless he's exploding for 45 points or 47 or whatever he did last season. Like, he's not that guy. And yet, he is a guy that is so fundamentally at the center of Sacramento's success to a point where he is being I feel he is being asked to do more for this Kings team than anybody else on this roster. Because he is alone in his position. He is it. He is all the Kings have. He is the wing depth of the Sacramento Kings. And that's not meaning to say that Fox and Sabonis, who had an amazing night last night, DeMar DeRozan, who ate straight 20-plus point performances. It's not to say that they're not being asked to do a lot, too, especially minutes-wise. All those guys are playing a heavy load to start this season. But Keegan Murray is being asked to spearhead this new offensive rebounding effort. Domantas Sabonis, his rebounding is the best in the NBA. That's expected of him to continue, but that's kind of at the foundation of what he does. Nobody has been challenged more to up their rebounding game than Keegan Murray, and he's answered the call. He had 7 offensive rebounds last night, out-rebounded Domantas Sabonis last night, and his 4 double-doubles in 8 games already this season. Nobody is being asked to do more defensively than Keegan Murray is doing. The top assignment, whether it's a guard or a wing, Keegan is guarding that position. The only position he's not guarding is a center. Like, he is taking the top defensive assignment every single night. On top of that, Keegan Murray is asked, I know this team is struggling to shoot from three-point range to start the season, he is asked to be one of the top floor spacers and three-point shooters on this team so that the spacing works for DeMar DeRozan, who's leading the NBA in mid-range jumpers, and De'Aaron Fox, we know is a demon when he gets downhill, and Domantas Sabonis, who's been attacking the rim more, so that all of that can work. Keegan Murray needs to be a poacher and a threat on the perimeter alongside Kevin Huerter. And finally, Keegan Murray is being asked to or continue to improve his game with his scoring off the dribble, which has been flying under the radar because from his rookie season where he led the NBA in three-point shooting to his sophomore season, he made a significant jump on the defensive end. This year, his significant jump has come in the rebounding. But throughout that time, he's steadily grown as someone who's more comfortable putting the ball on the floor, attacking the basket. He had a play last night where he attacked the basket, kind of got caught in the lane, sat in the paint, right? Defenders kind of came, closed in on him, cut off his lane, and then immediately bounced back out so that they could cut off the pass to an open shooter. Keegan stayed patient, held on to the ball, waited for the defense to react, step through, layup. Like that is a play that speaks to the saying that we hear a lot from players: the game is starting to slow down. Like that is an epitome of a moment like that where Keegan, the defense collapses, cuts off his path. A year or two ago, Keegan Murray probably leaves his feet and tries to force a pass to get out of there, or is forced into a tough shot. Stays strong, patient, wait, step through, layup, converts at the rim. And he scored a number of times off of the dribble last night. So in all these areas, Keegan is being asked to do more than anybody else on this team. He's rising to that challenge. There's a reason why statistically, when Keegan is on the floor versus off the floor, the drastic difference for this team is overwhelming. Like that is who Keegan Murray is, and that's who he's become. And there's a reason, guys, why every single time the Sacramento Kings try and engage in any kind of significant trade talk, the first guy that's being asked about is Keegan. Mm-hmm. Every general manager wants a Keegan Murray on their team because he's not as flashy and exciting as Jaden Ivey was coming into the league, but he's a guy that every good team needs to be successful. Sacramento has him here. That's why Sacramento's not getting rid of him in any trade package that doesn't bring back a bona fide, cannot turn down superstar.
I think that was a great breakdown too. I think Keegan Murray is perfect for what the Kings are right now and what they're trying to do. I think he's a great ball player, and he's growing. He's doing all this other stuff. I don't look at Keegan as like your second best player or your third best player. I think that'd be a little too much to put on his plate. But where he's at right now, the like super role player, stretch the floor, with his ability to shoot threes, rebound, be a top flight perimeter defender, I think he is perfect. Because there may be nights when he has 13 points. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he can have a 13-point night with 7 rebounds and have a massive impact on the game. You know what I mean? And that's what I mean when I say not being a number two or something like, because if there's number two, if you're a number two, there is no 13-point nights. There needs to be like only 20s, yeah, almost. Right. And I think that's a little too much for him at the very least at this point in his career. But right now, in this role, oh, he's devastating. I say all that to say he is capable, like we saw last night and other nights before, of, oh, yeah, I dropped 22. I dropped 25. And you're getting that from your fourth score now? He's perfect for what's going on here right now. And I think he's excelling in this role that he's in.
But the difference between him being a mid-teens score like he is right now and a 20 point per game score is just the 3-point shot falling. That's all it is at this point, because he's making the right decisions with the basketball. And we could take that a step further. The difference between the Sacramento Kings being a top five offense, which they are right now, and being the number one offense in the league is their 3-point shot falling. And I had this feeling, I broke this down on the podcast too, like I had this feeling last night where I was trying to figure out like why. I know the Kings are playing fine. They probably should be creating more separation than they are against Toronto. They ended up doing that in the fourth quarter and winning this game pretty comfortably. But I was sitting there going, like, why does this not feel as enjoyable, even though it's good? And I the way, like, the result that I came to is that the Sacramento Kings offense isn't as explosive as it used to be. But that doesn't mean it's worse, right? The offense of two seasons ago was explosive, with Monk and Fox getting up and down the floor, lobs to whatever big man was playing with Malik, or the Kentucky to Kentucky connection. And by the way, Malik tried for a number of highlights in transition last night. None of them went well for Malik, but he was trying. He was trying to give us some highlights last night. He was trying. The Kings, like, splashing down threes. Again, we joked to the point where Kevin Durant went on his podcast and was just like, how do we stop this team, right? That explosiveness from 2 years ago isn't really here or isn't here right now, because I don't think the Kings are shooting and scoring from the perimeter at the rate that they expected to or that they want to. That being said, they're so much better fundamentally in the half court. They're so much better off the dribble. They're so much better in isolation because of the addition of DeMar DeRozan and the maturity of this group in general playing together and getting more comfortable together, that the offense is still very, very, very good. It's just maybe not as exciting as it used to be, which is, I guess, how I broke it down for myself of what feels different.
Let me ask both of you guys something real quick, though. I'll start with Matt. Do you think that it's gone forever? Mm-hmm. Do you think they can get to that by just hitting a few more threes? Because I struggle with that. I think if you hit a couple more threes, obviously you're going to be potent or whatever. But I think fundamentally they're reverting a little bit into a half-court team, which isn't a bad thing. That's something I think that translates a little bit more in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Being able to get the ball to a guy like DeMar DeRozan seven straight times in the mid-post and let him go to work and just operate, that's different than swinging around Harder, DHO three-pointer, mm-hmm. like we were trying to do a couple years ago. Do you think they can get back to that, or is this kind of more who they are?
I could go like five straight minutes on this, but I'll try and shrink it down to 30 seconds.
We got time, Matt.
No, I know.
Go ahead.
I'm tired of solo pod, and I want to talk to some people. I'm not doing your show for you, damn it. I think it's like a glass half full, glass half empty way of looking at it, because they're generating really, really good looks. Also, I think they get out in transition more if they get more stops, and the Kings are like last night. They did a good halfway decent job getting out in transition, because thank God the Toronto Raptors didn't shoot well from 3-point range for the first time.
Well, after the first quarter.
That's true.
After Chris Boucher cooled down, everything got better.
Dear God, who pissed off that man? But like, it's a glass half full, glass half empty way of looking at it, because I could say the Kings are generating a lot of good looks. They're just not falling right now. And that's the glass half full way of looking at it, is like, okay, they're gonna start falling because they're good looks. They're wide open. The glass half empty way of looking at it is, you can't generate better looks than you're generating right now, and they're not falling. So you just have to hope that they're just going to start falling. So yes, the Kings have kind of gone more to a half-court offensive style. And I think that speaks to more of their personnel and the strengths of their personnel than anything else. But transition offense was still an emphasis of this team. And offensive pace, not pace in general, but offensive pace, mm-hmm. was a emphasis of this team, brought up by Kings GM Monty McNair on Media Day. And it was something they excelled at in preseason. They got out and ran in preseason. So with hopefully the minutes of the starters coming down a little bit and the three-point shot starting to fall, I think we'll see less of a reliance on half-court offense. But the half-court offense has been good even with the three-point shot not falling, which is encouraging, I think.
Mm-hmm. How are you – well, actually, I'm gonna use a player to transition to a different conversation. Keon Ellis. There's obviously been a lot of talk about Keon Ellis in this young part of the season, mainly because of a what appears to be now a single DNP CD that he didn't get. And then Mike's response that he might be a situational player moving forward. That sure feels dead. And the fact that Kevin Huerter got hurt or sick, excuse me, Kevin Huerter got sick, probably doesn't hurt the fact that Mike was kind of forced to play Keon, who I thought, and Matt, you tell me what you think. I think he's been absolutely terrific in his minutes in the Kings lineup.
Keon, and this is kind of a negative way to put it, but Keon is one of only two reliable bodies off the bench the Kings have right now.
No, that's
Keon and Malik, and that's it.
Yeah,
this roster is seven deep right now, and when Kevin Huerter went out, it was six deep. And like, I have much higher expectations for Trey Lyles, and we got to talk about Trey waking up and getting him going, because the Kings will need it. They need to get their bench figured out completely, or Monty McNair's got to start making some phone calls, because this can't last with this group. That being said, the days of Keon being a situational, that's done. The situation is he's good playing every night.
I think that lasted all of 0 days.
Yeah, that was Mike might have left the podium and went, yeah, that didn't actually, you know what? Screw that. Scrap that. We're
they gonna walk back like Alvin Gentry. You know what? Never mind. I'm not gonna quit on Keon.
But I do want to say too, because like, it was so much of a question, so much of a conversation of, should Kevin Huerter start? Should he come off the bench? Blah, blah, blah. When Kevin has played, I think Kevin Huerter's playing fantastic.
Yep.
He's not playing above himself. He's not playing below himself. He's not being what I labeled him as coming into the season. So good. Shut up, Matt George. He's not being a one trick pony in terms of if he's not hitting shots, he's not giving you anything else. He's rebounding the basketball. I think he's playing defense about as well as he can play it. It's not fantastic, but he's guarding with his chest.
It's not bad.
He's moving well. It's not bad at all. He's making the right decisions. He's not reaching, but when he is, he's doing a good job making a play on the ball. Even if he gets called for a foul, he's at least preventing an easy layup for a three-point play. Like, Kevin Huerter is holding down that spot. Kevin Huerter looks like the starting two guard on this team. Mm-hmm. And Keon Ellis, as expected, because this is who Keon Ellis is, you can play him with any lineup. You can play him with any combination. He's going to give you the same thing. So he's so valuable on the bench or as a starter, fill-in starter, whatever. So you're good with Kevin. You're good. You're good with your backcourt, right? Mm-hmm. Your four guards, you're set. Mm-hmm. And then you got your wing. Literally a wing in Keegan, and then you have a center that nobody can do what your center does.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're like, well, we got to play them 38 minutes a freaking night because we have no other option at this point.
Yeah, and that's something that it seems like it's easily attainable, though. You know what I mean? It feels like Monty.
What's easily attainable?
Finding a backup for Keegan.
Oh, okay.
Like, you've got the hard part out the way. You went and got DeMar DeRozan. You went and you have a Keegan Murray. You have a Sabonis. You have a Fox. You even have a Monk. You found a Keon Ellis.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you said, yeah, I don't think it's going to cost you much to get Finney Smith or a player like him. Like, you, that's what you're looking for. You're not. So, Matt, do you disagree? You're looking for a starter?
Oh, no, I'm not looking for a starter.
Yeah.
But I don't think a valuable rotation wing that can come in and space the floor and play defense, those don't grow on trees, and those are not easy to find and not easy to get, regardless of if they're a starter or coming off the bench. Sacramento has historically struggled to find depth at that position. Historically. They typically had one good guy, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Like, going back to the Rudy Gay days, the Ron Artest days, the days in between of John Solomons and Andres Nocioni, right? Like, that has been a hard position for Sacramento to fill. So I hear what you're saying in terms of Finney Smith or Cam Johnson, or these guys shouldn't carry a heavy price. And I still do think those should be the top two names that Monty is calling about. Hell, Monty should be making some calls to Toronto and figuring out how to get a couple of those guys or one of those guys in for some wing depth, 100%.
No, Chris Boucher can't kill you from the three-point line if he's on your team.
Right. Well, and we also know Boucher would come to Sacramento after shooting a billion percent against the Kings and then shoot 32% for the rest of the season, because that's just how
we
it works.
We call that the Marco Bellinelli.
or the George Hill or whatever. Like, it's just the way it is. But I hear what you're saying, Casey. I don't think those players are easy to get, because every single team wants those players and highly values those players, because a 3-and-D wing is one of the most valuable rotation or role playing assets that you can have, and there's just not enough of them.
In my opinion, do you think the Kings have an identity yet?
Yes. Yes, I do think they do. I think their identity is just a multifaceted, offensively potent team that is hard to put away, but also will keep you in the game, if that makes sense. Like, I think the Kings are showing us exactly who they are every single game. Thankfully, the three games that have had the widest margins have been three wins for the Kings against three teams that they should be beating: Portland at home, Toronto at home last night, and Utah at home. But the final score last night does not tell the story of that game. As you guys know, that game was close the entire time, and the Kings were battling from behind a good portion of it. They just had a crazy fourth quarter to put the game away. Mm-hmm. But the Kings are showing us who they are, which is, on most nights, the game's going to be close. They can hang with anybody. They can beat anybody. But they're also going to keep you in it a little bit. I think the Sacramento Kings are showing us and telling us who they are. Unless that three-point shot wakes up, that's when they can really start to blow teams out and create massive separation. But if that isn't falling consistently, I think the Kings are going to be in every game, and hopefully they're going to have that clutch fourth quarter identity of, if they're in it, there's a great chance they're going to win it.
Let's talk about the history we saw last night.
Yep.
The perfect game by Domantas Sabonis. Yeah, Matt, I got to be honest with you. I had no idea what was going on until I saw Stat Muse after the game. It wasn't like I was following this throughout the game. Like, oh, he's still perfect. Like, I had no clue. And then you read those numbers and you read in the history of the game, nobody has had the triple-double with perfect shooting and no turnovers. We complained a little bit about earlier.
It's not what I – there were two pieces of history last night.
What you thinking?
The one that you're talking about and then the Kings history.
DeMar. So
it's funny. I thought you were transitioning to DeMar, but you're going to Domas.
No, man. I didn't. That's another one I didn't even think about the number until it actually.
Yeah, Matt mentioned it. Eight straight.
Yeah, man. So take your pick. History all over the place.
Well, I messed you up. I just to talk about Domas.
It's history all over the place.
No, talk. Yeah, no. Stick with the Domas and the triple double. The perfect shooting and the zero turnovers. There's one game like that in NBA history, and it happened last night at the Golden One Center.
And you wouldn't know if you watched NBA Today.
You wouldn't, yeah, because they don't care because his name isn't Nikola.
So here's the thing. Casey, I failed last night. I failed last night because, like, I am the biggest I am the Paul Heyman to DeMontis Sabonis' Brock Lesnar.
Nice.
Like, I am the guy that
nice.
Just...
Well, find a different... Yeah, not Brock. Find someone else.
Okay, sorry. Roman Reigns.
There you go. That's better. That's better.
But you know what I mean. Like, Brock didn't talk.
Yeah. It was you're the advocate. Yeah, before. you're the advocate.
You're more that for Keegan, though.
What? No, not as much as I've kinda. Been for Domas.
Keegan. And Keegan really don't talk.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Actually, you know, on both of them, hell.
True.
That's fine. Yeah. It's the bloodline. It's the Matt George bloodline. Well, all right, maybe not.
One of these things doesn't belong.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, Paul, like, look, Paul with the Samoan dynasty, it's all right.
Okay. But I did a whole ass podcast by myself last night, y'all. I talked about Keegan, I talked about DeMar, and then like 28 minutes in, I'm like, oh yeah, DeMontis Sabonis had a triple double last night. Didn't even mention the history because there was so much other stuff to talk about.
Yeah,
and like that should be, knowing me and my brand, that's usually like DeMontis Sabonis did something historic. All right, lead with that and start talking about how the entire country is not talking about it, so we got to do it. Like, there's a reason why Sacramento's loud about everything DeMontis Sabonis does, because everybody else will ignore it, and somebody's got to hear it. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna say it loud enough for people to hear it. But I mean, look, the man followed up a game winner in Miami with a never been done before perfect triple double. Mm. And Kevin O'Connor ain't saying a damn thing. These accounts ain't saying a damn thing. I know the NBA Twitter account tweeted out his stats and history, and I appreciate that, but you ain't seen it on ESPN. And I'm just, Lord have mercy. Just wait till the first time one of them tweets about DeMontis Sabonis having a bad night whenever it happens. Yeah. Yeah. Sacramento as a whole, we need to destroy that tweet. We need to ratio the living hell out of that tweet, because these people don't even pretend like they're paying attention anymore. Or if they do, they cherry pick when to talk about it. They only talk about it when DeMontis Sabonis is struggling, or the Sacramento Kings have lost a game, or something happens, or, oh, Sabonis had a triple double, but it was in a loss, so did it really matter? They cherry pick these things, or they just flat out aren't paying attention. These national NBA accounts whose job it is to literally follow the NBA at large and have conversations about everything going on. And I'm not just talking about the Ringer. I'm not just talking about these top show. I'm talking about the Locked On freaking podcast network. The Locked On Podcast Network, the Locked On NBA podcast, who laughed and scoffed at the idea of DeMontis Sabonis being as good as or better than Bam Adebayo. Straight up laughed about it during a Sacramento Kings preview podcast that they did that I was not featured in this offseason. My own network is doing that nonsense. Sabonis hits a game winner over Bam Adebayo? Freaking nothing. The very next game, DeMontis Sabonis' first ever triple-double of its kind? Nothing. Anywhere. So at this point, like, they're showing us what they are and they're telling us what they are. Mm-hmm. DeMontis Sabonis, well, no matter what the man does, it will not get respect. And somehow, if this man managed to have a perfect triple-double in the playoff victory, they're still going to find a way to say it doesn't matter because the Kings have to win three more times to win the playoff series. They're going to find something. Mm-hmm. So at this point, it doesn't matter. It matters to me because I'm going to continue to get pissed off and have high blood pressure about it. But Domantas Sabonis, like, he's making history damn near every night at this point. And that's been going back to last season. And it's in one ear, out the other for them, or they don't pay attention and claim they cover the NBA. Mm-hmm. So forget about it. We know what Domas is doing here in Sacramento. It's special. It continues to be special. And if it's going to continue to go under the radar, that's fine. Sacramento is going to be as loud about it as possible because that's our center.
Well said.
I would say walk off, but we can't. We still have time left. But that's a
I'm
that's
out
a,
of here.
That's a that's a perfect way to summarize Domas. And the thing is, like, it was all kind of accentuated by what he did last night, because that's a one of one. Like, there's no other. That's it. Like, there's one game like that in NBA history, and he has it. Even when you take away the turnovers, I think there's only 8 games like that in the last, like, 40 years or something like that, 40-some-odd years. But, Matt, he's had a phenomenal start to the season. Like, we talked about our frustrations during the, you know, 5-game preseason, where it whether we had a discussion about, you know, guys just wanting to get through it, maybe just going through the motions, maybe not seeing a lot. Domas worked his ass off in those games. And if you go back and you watch those preseason games, you see Domas working in every single one of them. And, man, that has carried over with nothing more than a few more shots to the face and the head. It's carried right over here incredibly into the regular season.
What isn't he doing? Like, that's the question at this point. What is it Domantas Sabonis doing? And everybody who's going to hear that question is going to immediately go, oh, defense, defense, defense. He's part of one of the best statistical lineups defensively in the league. The Kings starting five has been one of the best, if not the best, statistical defensive lineup in the league to start this season. Small sample size, small sample. Well, what do you want from us? We can only go off of what we've seen in front of us. And Domantas Sabonis is doing everything that people said he wasn't a $40-plus million player to because he didn't do it enough. Mm-hmm. He's scoring the basketball more. He had a game freaking winner. He's on another double-double streak. He's got 7 out of 8. He started in Minnesota without a double-double, and the world fell apart. Like, oh, it's over. And then he's got 2 triple-doubles in the course of that double-double, including the historic double-double last night. He's part of a really, really solid defensive lineup. He's still leading the NBA in rebounds again, no matter who Victor Wembanyama is or Zubats or any of these guys that they throw out there to try and take that crown from him. And last night, he had 9 assists, damn near like 10 minutes into the game. What isn't Domantas Sabonis doing? What more could Domantas Sabonis do? I know, like, he had 6 shots last night. Okay, that's not his fault. He was distributing correctly. DeRozan was cooking. Keegan was cooking. And in the shots that Sabonis got, he converted and made every single one. He's getting to the foul line more. He was a perfect 5 of 5 from the line last night. Tell me, what more could Domantas Sabonis do? Block shots? Your own head coach in Sacramento is telling you that a block shot doesn't freaking matter, because block shots, and I love blocks, by the way, block shots don't guarantee a change in possession. You know what does? Defensive rebounds. Mm-hmm. And there is not a better defensive rebounder in the NBA than Domantas Sabonis. Every defensive possession has to end with a defensive rebound, and you have the best guy in the league at doing that. Tell me how that does not impact how we look at that person as a defender. Domas closes the possession, and now he's running up the floor and running the offense as your point center and going coast to coast half the freaking time. What doesn't the man do? What more do you need to see? I don't know. There's not a correct answer to that question. Oh, in the playoffs. Okay, yeah, you got to get there first, and he's helping you get there.
That's, oh boy, Matt cooking.
Fired up Matt George.
Matt cooking, that's what I'm talking about right there. Well, let's stay on the
stay with the history.
Yeah, let's stay with the history, man. And DeMar DeRozan last night in that fourth quarter, it was 5, 6, 7 straight times. The Kings ran this set where Keon Ellis brings the ball up, comes across the court on a Domas, the kind of a ghost screen, get the ball to Fox, get the ball to DeRozan in the mid post, let him go to work on a number of different Toronto Raptors. Time after time again, he finished 5 of 6 in that fourth quarter with 11 points. And once they started doubling, he started moving the ball. That's when Keegan got a shot. That's when Domas got the put back, all this other stuff. He was as advertised. You saw it last night, Damian. You'll see it on Friday. When he gets the ball in the fourth quarter in the mid post, it's like Golden One Center starts to rise, and there's this murmur of like, oh, yeah, like all this other stuff. Already, He's got the Golden One Center and Kings fans in the palm of his hands. He is that guy right now.
And let's keep going, KC, because, God, it's 2024. We got all the scouting reports, all the film on the planet, and yet every single game, these fools think that they can block his shot. Every single game. And then he gets the three-point play. He gets fouled, hits the shot, goes to the line, converts one more. He went 3 of 3 from the foul line, all three of them three-point plays off of and-ones. Mm. Right? Like, and we keep going down the numbers, 27, 26, 33, 27, 20, 23, 23, 26. Those are all the scoring numbers in his first 8 games as a Sacramento King. Y'all, remember what we were told about DeMar DeRozan and how he won't fit in the offense because he doesn't shoot threes and he's going to be a spacing nightmare? DeMar DeRozan is shooting 43% from three-point range so far this month. Half of DeMar DeRozan's threes have come in the fourth quarter in crunch time when you've needed them most. Mm. So yeah, DeMar DeRozan might not be a lights out floor spacing 3-point shooter to the level of other players at his position and other scorers in the modern NBA. But when you need threes, he's hitting them for you. Mm. He's still spacing the floor. And even if he's not spacing the floor, it doesn't matter because the man doesn't need space because he's going to get you to bite on the pump fake or try and block his shot. You're going to foul him. He's going to go to the line. And he'll probably hit the shot over you too. There's nothing you can do against the man. There is only one number when it comes to DeMar DeRozan that is irrelevant. That's 35 years of age. That number is irrelevant because there's nothing about his age. There's nothing about that number that means a damn thing to how this guy plays basketball, because this is going to be the 12th straight season that he averages 20 or more points, and half of them have been in his 30s. Mm. This man does not slow down. This is what he does. Why did anybody think it was going to be different? Turns out you don't just put on a Sacramento Kings jersey and now suddenly you age 10 years. Believe it or not, you can put on a Kings jersey and still be damn good. And that's what DeMar DeRozan is.
I think the thing that's been most amazing, Matt, isn't just DeMar's play. It feels like, and we've kind of used the term, the DeMar DeRozan effect. They're shooting less threes. They're working from the inside more, and they're getting to the foul line a ton, and making them.
That's the one.
I mean, they shot 87% something last night on 32 attempts. Matt, I kept getting hung up on the fact they were 13 of 15 in a 1-point game against Miami the other night. And how many times last year did we look at games, close games, where they lost this one by two, they lost one this one? Yeah, they missed 7 free throws. Mm-hmm. Everybody remembers Milwaukee. There are a handful of other games. They're not as dramatic as the Milwaukee one, but there are plenty of other games where you look at, they were close losses, and you realize, man, they shot 60% from the free throw line. DeMar, who has always been a high-volume free throw shooter, a high-percentage free throw shooter, comes in here, and it feels like everybody else has followed the lead.
Yes. 100. I mean, that's the only explanation. Like, it's infectious because he's shooting 87% from the free throw line so far this season. But you have De'Aaron Fox shooting it. I think he's still in the 90s. Is he not? Like, De'Aaron has started the season shooting in the 90s, and everybody is talking about De'Aaron's having a bad start of the season. I beg to differ. I don't think De'Aaron is being as prolific of a scorer as he should be, but he's rebounding the basketball. He's distributing the basketball. He's still a pesky defender. He's still close to the top, if not at the top of the league, in steals or around that. And he's shooting. I know his three-point shooting hasn't been great. We can talk about the 0-11 game in Toronto. But De'Aaron Fox is, I mean, the entire team's struggling from three-point range. De'Aaron Fox is playing well. Could he be better in certain moments? 100%. And there will be a point this season. There will be a point, whether it's a stretch of games or a certain game, or God forbid because of injuries, there will be a point where the Kings have to lean heavily on De'Aaron to carry them through. Mm-hmm. DeMar DeRozan is off to a ridiculous start to this season. I'd like to believe he'll go 82 games scoring 20 or more points. I have no idea. But at some point, like, De'Aaron's going to need to step up. And especially once we get to playoff time, we know how important De'Aaron's going to be to the scoring of the Sacramento Kings in the playoffs in those big moments, because that's where your stars shine the brightest. So De'Aaron's going to be just fine. But De'Aaron is shooting extremely well from the free throw line. Domantas Sabonis is shooting better from the free throw line. Everybody is not just getting to the line, they're converting at the line. And I'm not going to pretend that DeMar just showing up all of a sudden boosted the ratings of everybody else around him.
Like I disagree, Matt.
But, well, he's got something. He's doing something right. Yeah. And he's telling them, he's giving them some kind of advice because everybody is knocking down free throws. And it's really, really nice to see. I wish I could enjoy it, though, but I'm so busy worried about 2031 and the pick swap.
Well, yeah, that guy, man, this would be a lot more enjoyable.
Trying to enjoy it, but every time I look at the scoreboard and see DeMar DeRozan at 27 points, I'm like, 27, let's see, how close is 27 to 31? 2031, oh, the Kings don't have their... Yep. Oh, no, they do have their pick. They're just going to swap it with San Antonio.
Yeah, it's still there.
It's still a pick.
It's still there.
87% from the free throw line for De'Aaron right now, 8 games into the season.
Gotta love that.
A good number.
Hey, Matt, we'll get you out of here on this. They got a game on Friday night at the Golden 1 Center against the Los Angeles Clippers. They got a game on Sunday in Phoenix against the Suns. Which one is the bigger game?
Phoenix.
Yeah? Why?
Because I think Phoenix is the bigger test. Well, I guess that's defined bigger, right? Bigger in terms of...
We all said the Clippers game because I want to know that at home against a Clippers team that isn't as bad as everybody may think but still isn't better than you, I need you to handle business. You going into the arena of a team that's 7-1, good team, you might lose, and I might not learn nothing about you. Like you play them on Wednesday at home. If you split the two games, no harm, no foul. But lose on Friday, and I'm going to be a little – I'm like, come on now.
You know what? That makes – perfect sense to me. I think I still think the way, and I think Will Z talked about this on your guys' show yesterday, the same way that right out of the gate the Timberwolves were a kind of a measuring stick test of where the Kings are at with the top of the league, and they hung with Minnesota, arguably should have won that game. I look at this Kings team today, 8-9 games later, it will be 9 games in Phoenix. I look at that differently. Then I think this team is different from what they were game one. They just are more comfortable together, more confident together. Yeah. So here's another measuring stick against not just a really, really good team in the Phoenix Suns. Mm-hmm. It's hard to like them and OKC. They're the top two teams in the West right now. And shout out Golden State's play. No, Golden State's hot. Like, don't get me wrong. Golden State's hot, but Golden State's going to come crashing down to earth at some point. Mm-hmm. I just think, and I don't know if that's a plummet off a cliff, but I think Golden State might end up being just a better team than we think. But Golden State's not going to win or go 7 or 8-1 out of every 9 games for the remainder of this season. They will slow down at some point. Phoenix, legit. Very legit. OKC, dear God, how did they get better somehow? Like,
they added players that made them better. Like, they went for very specific types of guys, got them, and it's worked.
Yeah.
Pisses me off that they got Alex Caruso, man. That still pisses me off.
That's a good basketball team.
I like the measuring stick of Phoenix on Sunday just to see kind of where you're at against the top of the West. But I agree with you 100% about the Clippers Friday.
And for the record, we asked the question, you know, content over everything. I'll take either one. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter.
Right.
Hey, it's not like I'm sulking if they lose to the Clippers and beat the Suns. It's just like I'm curious. Like, it feels like there's good momentum with this team. It feels like they haven't really been, you know, slowed down so much. Even in the Toronto game, it's like, it's not too bad. Like, it was a tough game. It was a tough loss. But overall, man, it's not too bad. Matt, we appreciate you as always. Make sure you check out the Locked On Kings podcast, available on YouTube. And I really recommend the YouTube show. It is absolutely terrific, all of the work Matt puts into that, especially after home games. But, of course, you can get it wherever you get podcasts from. And Matt's great work over there at ABC.